V'yi b'yom ha-shmini. So let's pause there already. That's already our stop. V'yi b'yom ha-shmini. As we've noted various times, Sefer Vayikra is a book which, for the most part, doesn't have narrative, but there's a second point aside from the narrative. Okay, it's not just the narrative which is missing. Sefer Vayikra also is chronologically ambivalent. I make up these things. It's chronologically ambivalent because there's no sense of time. If we went directly from the end of Shemot and continued into Sefer Bamidbar, nobody would have noticed that the book was missing, because that's where the story continues. There are two narratives in the book of Vayikra, but only one of them gives us a chronological point. Vayihi b'yom ha-shmini. The other narrative, which I'm leaving out for now, tells a story, but doesn't tell us when it happened, which therefore will leave the commentaries to argue, okay, when did this story happen, and the other side of that, why is it placed over here? So when it comes to Vayihi b'yom ha-shmini, we know when this day is. Well, actually, we almost know when it is. There is some intrigue, there is somewhat of a difference of opinion what the Yom HaShmini is, if it's Rosh Chodesh or not. So let's take the normative approach, Rashi, that this is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, year number 2. They've left Egypt almost 1 year ago, minus 2 weeks. By the way, you'll notice, therefore, that it's very often that we read Parshat Shmini right around Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it sometimes even comes out on the very day when these events are taking place. But if I think a little bit more, this day is mentioned in Bamidbar, in Parshat Naso, on the day that the Nisim start to bring the offerings as we start the consecration of the Mishkan. So, if forget about Sefer Vayikra, if it should exist or shouldn't exist. Of course, you all love Vayikra, so we'll keep Vayikra. But if we would have cut out Perek Tet and Perek Yud, and cut that and placed it in Parshat Naso. So I know what you're thinking. The real reason not to do it is that Parshat Naso is already very long. Okay, so we'll turn it into 2 Parshiot. But that doesn't necessarily help us, because this part of Shmini about the consecration, Aaron's Korban, Aaron's preparation, and then we have all of the Nisim. It would have made a lot of sense just to put those together. Moreover, what happens with the Bnei Aaron, that also could have been put over there, which means, when I say that in all of Sefer Vayikra, there's no time, as it were. Time stands still, and the story only continues back in Bamidbar. That's with the exception of Yom HaShmini, when we're given some kind of time frame. There's one other point where a time frame is referred to, and I'll try to get to that before we finish. So what I'm pointing at is that what this story does, it's not just that there's a narrative here, there's another narrative. But here is the only time that we actually have a narrative connected to a time element, which seems to go against what the rest of the book of Vayikra does. So again, I want to repeat something which we've already observed. When we start Vayikra, Vayikra El Moshe, that's a verse which is actually very difficult. I never would have gotten away with writing or starting a book like that. Who called to Moshe? Vayikra El Moshe. That's not the way you write. So when you look at the first verse in Vayikra El Moshe, it continues off of the way Shemot ended. The Mishkan's complete, the cloud comes down, Moshe wants to go in, can't go in, until Vayikra Moshe. We have the exact same formulation in Perek Kaf Dalet, when Moshe goes to Har Sinai and can't go there for 6 days, and then Vayikra El Moshe, and that's in one Pasuk. So over here, what becomes 2 different books in Shemot earlier was one Pasuk, which really does give us the sense that this is the continuation, but I'm going to say it again. The continuation of Vayikra sort of transcends time, and that may be very, very important. Because we mentioned a couple of weeks ago that there are different names of God which are used in different places. When it comes to the Korbanot, it's always the name Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh means Ho-Yah-Ho-Vav-Yiyah. It means an aspect of God which is outside of time. God creates time. God is outside of time. The concept of tshuva, especially when we move over to Yom Kippur, because there we will see it in really stark terms, lifnei Hashem titaru, in front of God, yudkei vavkei, outside of time, you can become pure. On a logical level, how can you ever do tshuva? On a logical level, how can you ever change the past? On a logical level, if you philosophically, it's impossible. If you did something yesterday, today I feel bad, you still did something yesterday, unless you're standing in front of God who's outside of time. When you're standing in front of God who's outside of time, yesterday doesn't make a difference anymore. So the whole mystery of tshuva is connected to this concept of yud kei vav kei. It's not a question that God is judging us, Elohim. It's a question of yud kei vav kei, and then everything impossible becomes possible because we realize that even though we, you know, have this whole wonderful world and it exists within time, space, and matter, in a certain sense, the whole idea of the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash is connected to yud kei vav kei, which transcends time, space, and matter, and therefore the past doesn't make a difference. Reality is right now. And you can say, hold it, that's a fantasy to say that reality is right now. Well, it's a fantasy to say that reality is right now for human beings who exist within time, but it's not when we talk about God and standing in front of God, then suddenly our fantasy becomes reality. If that made sense, you guys are all in trouble. Bereshit bara Elohim. So our world begins with Elohim. Yud kei vav kei is outside of time, space, and matter. So there is this duality in our relationship with God, one transcendental, kadosh, 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 completely beyond, v'loch al aretz kavodo, which is the contradiction, that it's not a contradiction, it's the complexity that we live with. So now let's go back. So far we're up to you, right? We got three words done. Vayihi bayom hashmini. So over here, we just now found a contradiction to the whole sense of Vayikra, which should be outside of time. You understand what I'm saying now? Vayikra being Torah Kohanim, of course, should be outside of time. So now why do we have time here nonetheless? That's really the starting point. Vayi b'yom ha-shmini kara Moshe la'aron. So as opposed to Vayikra el Moshe, now it's kara Moshe la'aron. Ulevanav, pay attention, banav are here as well. Ula Ziknei Yisrael. Who are the Ziknei Yisrael? Is it what we would call the 70s of Canaan? Is it the Nisim? Is it generally a generic term for leaders? But at least we'll keep that thought in mind. Three groups were called. Aaron, Banav, Ziknei Yisrael. Unless you want to say it's really two. Aaron Uvanav and Ziknei Yisrael. I'm fine however you want to divide it. Vayomer el Aaron. So, Moshe says to Aaron, Kach lecha egel, Ben Bakar l'chatat. Take for you an egel, a Ben Bakar, son of a Bakar, for a chatat. Now I know what all of you are thinking right now. What you're all thinking is, wow, that's pretty interesting, because back in Shemot, when Aaron was told to be consecrated as the Kohen, he was told to bring a par, and here it's an egel. Okay, let's be honest. None of you were thinking that. But I'll tell you what you were thinking. What you were thinking when you all channel your medieval exegesis part of your brain, what you're all thinking is, wow, that's very appropriate that Aaron is told to bring an egel, and should I stop right? And you're saying, wow, egel, I know that from someplace, and maybe there's something appropriate about Aaron bringing an egel as a chatat, as a sin offering. And what we're going to begin to realize now is that this day is going to be a day where something special will happen. We don't know yet what that special is, because there's going to be a lot of special things, but there's going to be a tikkun on this day. And I'm using the word tikkun at this point, not necessarily in the Kabbalistic or the Arizalian sense, but rather I'm using it more fixing. Something was broken and it's going to be fixed. And the very idea, very suggestion, that Aaron is being told specifically to bring an egel as a sin offering means that something is going to be fixed, which is very personal and very traumatic and very disturbing. And what I want you to think about as we proceed now is where Aaron's mind is at, what Aaron's mindset is, how Aaron feels entering into this. I mean, where is he emotionally right now? I know it's totally unfair to ever ask such questions. Is it okay if I ask that? Where is Aaron at emotionally? Does he have anxiety? Does he feel guilt? Does he feel... I'm just bringing up these questions because I think they're incredibly important, especially when we see what happens.
Do you have
Normally what's brought over here would have been a par. The expected korban would have been a par. The whole difference, by the way, between a par and an egel. And I'll tell you a secret. Had it said par here, I would have given the same thing. I would have said, oh, it's a par. It's an egel, which is a little more mature. Look at that. And I would have made a whole drasha out of that. So you wouldn't have stopped me. The difference is that an egel is under a year and a par is over a year. So that would have been the whole difference. But let's continue. He's supposed to bring an egel ben bakar, lechatat, ve'ayel le'olat mimim. And he's supposed to bring a ram as a burnt or complete burnt offering to mimim. So what are you thinking now? You guys are well trained. You guys are well trained. This is it's total behavior modification. This is very good. So we're thinking about Akedat Yitzchak. Okay, what's the relevance? So, yes. Ayel Ola Egel. Sorry, Ayel Ola Yitzchak Akeda. I'm with you. Relevance. Which means just because I can make an association doesn't mean that the association is necessarily meaningful. So what I need to do is to try to make or to discern some type of meaning from it. So I want to point something out, which again, now that we are extremely sophisticated, we should all appreciate. When we turn to source number 6 and we look at the Akedah, and by the way, I do want you all to appreciate the methodology of what we're going to be doing today, is that I'm going to take 2 of the more difficult sections of Torah and use each one to explain the other one, and then everything's going to make sense. So just realize that, because these are 2 sections which are impossible to understand. So let's go to the Akedah now. Vayi achar d'vrim eile, and after these things, ve'elokim nisat Avraham, and Elokim decided to test Avraham. What do we all know right now? It's Din. And what do we all know right now? Okay, I'll continue a little bit, and then we'll see what we know. Ve'elokim nisat Avraham, yom lev Avraham, yom hineini. Calls out, Avraham, here I am. Ve'yom ekachnot bincha, take your son, yichidcha, your only son, asher haftu, you love it, Yitzchak, v'lech lecha le'eretz ha-moriah, that will be very important. We'll come back to that in a moment. Ve'aleihu sham le'olah, and offer him as an offering. One of the mountains there in the area of Moriah, which I will tell you. What do we know? Any of us who are theologically sensitive know one thing. Avram, whether he knows it or not, you'll tell me. But what do we know? Because we know the Gemara. We mentioned it a couple weeks ago. We know the opinion of Ben Azai. What did Ben Azai say at the end of Gemara Menachot? He said that whenever Korbanot are brought, it's always the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, not Elokim. Elohim tells Avraham to bring this. So what do we know? That there's no way in the world that this can end up with Yitzchak being offered as a korban, because it doesn't work that way. This is theologically impossible. So therefore, all of us can be relaxed. It's not going to happen. There's no way there's going to be, you relax? Now, as I said, the only question is Avraham as theologically sophisticated as we are? So does Avram know? Is Avram saying, excuse me, Gemara Menachot, this isn't true, Ben Azai said this, what are you talking about, this can't be, and therefore he just goes along, you know, for the ride. But again, I'm pointing out what we know, and it's not going to happen. We get to Pasuk Yud, v'yishlach avim yado, v'yikachet ma'achelet, l'shchodet b'no. So maybe he doesn't know. I mean, he sounds like he's about to do it, he's got the knife in his hand. V'yikra ilav malach Hashem. Which name was just now used? Hashem. Yud kei vav kei. So now there could be a korban. Now is something else. Malach Hashem min Hashemayim v'ma'avram ma'avram yom hineini v'yomar al tishlachidcha lanar. Again, the idea of a korban is not to bribe Elohim, not to bribe the judge. I know it's an old Jewish custom to try to bribe any and all officials. That's not what a korban is. What a korban is getting close to Yud kei vav kei. Karov, getting close to Yud Kei Vav Kei, who's outside of time, and so on. It's not about bribing the judge. But now it's Malach Hashem, says don't. Just don't. Al tishtachid chalana, va'al tasilo mu'uma, ki ata yadat, ki ro Elokim ata, v'lo chasachta b'nka yichidcha mimeni. V'yisa Avram et einav, and Avram lusaf his hands, v'yihine, ayil achar ne'achaz b'svach b'karnav, there is a ram who is entangled in its horns in the brush. The Gemara then will say, whenever Jews get entangled in sin, they'll use the horn of the ram to blow and to therefore generate forgiveness. Vayelech Avram v'yikache ta'ayil v'yileu la'ola. And Avram goes and he takes the ayil and he offers him as the ola. Except there's 2 more words. Tachat b'no. The Tachat B'no is what's very interesting here. So let's go back a second, and let's draw the comparison between these two different days. Yom HaShmini is the day that we're having the Chanukat HaBayit. It's the day we're having the Chanukat HaMizbeach. It's the day that we're having the consecration of the brand new Mishkan. When God tells Avraham to go and to build an altar and to offer his son on the mountain, I'm going to show you Behar HaMoriah. In reality, what Avraham is doing is he is consecrating Chanukat HaMizbeach of the Har HaBayit of one day where the Beit HaMikdash is going to stand. This is the Chanukat HaMizbeach. Which means when I say there may be a parallel between these 2 days, absolutely. They're both dealing with Chanukat HaMizbeach. So channeling this Olah, but I'm still missing something. What is the purpose of the Akedah? Now it's so obvious that no one can say it. The purpose of the Akedah, I said it's so obvious that nobody can say it. The purpose of the Akedah is creating what the Ramban will later call, and we'll again make up a term, we'll call it, as opposed to psychological transference, we'll call it theological transference, in the sense that the animal is taking the place of a person. Where in the world do we see an animal taking the place of a person? When God says, take Yitzchak and put him on the altar, for what purpose? For only one purpose. And that is to take him off of the altar and put the Olah there in its place. Once Yitzchak is put there and taken off of there, and the animal is put in its place, and those are the last two words, Tachat B'no. That the Korban becomes the replacement of Yitzchak. And at this point, we just now learned a powerful lesson. No, God does not want child sacrifice. No, God does not want human sacrifice. Yes, there's such a world of sacrifices, which is supposed to be a powerful, cathartic experience. Remember all the words the Ramban uses, or at least that we use when we explain the Ramban. So who would have had a powerful, cathartic experience of seeing the Korban as taking the place of the most valuable thing to him? Avram during the Akedah, which in the Akedah creates this relationship, what we're going to now call this transference taking place between the animal and the human being. So now we go back again on this day. What is Aaron told to bring? Aaron is told to bring an ayil as an olah, which now channels back, connects to the Chanukat HaBayit of the Beit HaMikdash, where this Mishkan will end up going, leading towards. You know, again, we're leading in the future back to the past. By the way, that should remind you something of being out of time, past, present, and future coming together. Right? This is going to lead to the Beit HaMikdash, which leads back to Avram, who made this Mizbeach in this particular place. The whole idea is saying, I do not want human sacrifice. Put Yitzchak on just to show one point, to take him off, the animal can take his place, and now we understand everything. Yes? Yes. Let's continue. Pasuk Gimel. We're not going to get that far, are we? Pasuk Gimel. The El Bnei Yisrael to Daber Lemor, and to the children of Israel say, Kichu Sir Izim Lachatat. You bring a Sir Izim Lachatat. Your sin offering will be a goat. And that relates back to Mechirat Yosef. Look at the Sifra in source number 2. It's all here. By the way, everything we want to learn today is in the Sifra. Sifra, if we don't know, is the Medrash Halacha, as opposed to Medrash Agadah, but there's some Agadah here as well. It's the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. It's considered to be a quite old, quite authentic source. It's more or less parallel to the Mishnah. V'yomer el Aaron kach l'cha egel ben bakar l'chatat melamed sh'omer l'moshe l'aron, Aaron achi. By the way, you notice something very tender there. My brother Aaron. Even though God is accepting, has accepted, you still have to pay the Satan. Now that's very interesting, and I doubt we're going to get back to this. So what just now happened is, no, you still have to do something, bring the offerings, but it's not only you who have to, but it's also Bnei Yisrael. Shenemar ve'o Bnei Yisrael to the Ber Leimar Kuchu Sir Izim Lachatat. As it says, and to the children of Israel, they have to bring a Sir Izim Lachatat, the goat. V'chimara u'i Yisrael lavi yoter mi Aaron. Why do they have to do more than Aaron? Because again, Aaron's already fixing the chet ha'egel. So what else has to be done? Why do they have? Why is there an additional consideration? Ela amar lahem yesh b'yedchem b'tchila. You have an old open account. Again, yesh b'yedchem b'tchila. You have an old open account from a long time ago, the yesh b'yedchem b'sof, and you have a new sin which is much more recent. Yesh b'yedchem b'tchila. What's the old account? V'yishchetu sir izim. They killed a goat and they took the coat of many colors and they dipped it in. V'yesh b'yedchem b'sof. And you have more recently asulam egel masicha, when they made the egel. Yavo seir izim v'chapel masa izim. Yavo egel v'chapel masa egel. So here you see the Sefer says it black and white what we understood, that the egel is being brought for the chet egel, the seir izim is being brought for the sale of Yosef. But I want you to appreciate something. We go into this with the fear and with the anxiety and with the, and feelings perhaps of inadequacy, and will God really forgive us? And let's be honest, all that we're really thinking about is about the Chet Egel. We're thinking about, well, is God really going to be with us? Is God really going to be involved with us? Or has God, will God abandon us? Will God reject us? And here we're told, I want you to go now and start fixing things, not just the recent thing. We're going backwards. And that's also perhaps quite important. But here's the key. And without this, we'll have a very hard time understanding everything which happens here. When we get now to Pasuk Dalet back in the first source, and there are other things that Am Yisrael is bringing as well, the Egel B'Keves Ben Ashnatimim La'ola, they bring other things as their Ola, Pasuk Dalet, V'shur V'ayel L'Shlamim, they're bringing a Chatat and an Ola and a Shlamim, and so now you realize the whole arsenal of korbanot almost all being utilized over here, right? In ola achatat shlamim mincha ki hayom Hashem nira eleichem, because today God is going to reveal Himself to you, which means it's going to happen, right? As they say in the movie, if you build it, I will come. So over here is exactly it. Asuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'tochan. And Moshe is saying God is going to reveal Himself. He says it a second time in Pasuk Vav. Yom Moshe zedavar shetziva Hashem ta'asu v'yor alechem kvod Hashem. And you are going to see the glory of God. Now the truth is, it may be somewhat an ominous case of foreshadowing that Moshe says it twice. Maybe there'll be more than one. But I want to now read through, and just I'm going to make a couple observations before we go further. Source number 3 was the pasuk that was referred to in the Sifra. Ve'ichu ktonat Yosef, ve'yishchatu se'irizim. Notice it's interesting. It uses the word shchita. Not they killed, ve'yishchatu. Ve'itpalu et ktonat pedam. It's almost like there are elements over here of a korban. They take the blood and whatever. So it's very interesting that sin now gets channeled in to today, when they're about to have to offer the series in Mazachatat. V'yishlechu, right, and then they sent the Ketonah Pasim. Also note the Rambam, and this is worthwhile reading and considering in source number 4 in the Mor Nevuchim, he starts off by giving other reasons why a goat is offered, in terms of going against Avodah Zarah. People used to worship to Se'irim, whatever Se'irim may mean, others say it's Shadim. And then he says, but the rabbis, second line from the bottom, Avala Chachamim, Samu Ta'am, Hayot Kaparat Tzibur La'olam V'Se'irim. Always when it talks about the Chatat for the community, it is always a goat. And he says, and the rabbis notice, Bavor Shechet Adat Yisrael, because what is the sin of the community of Israel? Last line on the page. Kula Haya V'Se'ir Izim. Remez L'Mechirat Yosef HaTzadik, Shenemar V'Inyano, and don't take this interpretation lightly. And he continues to say that this is absolutely correct. So it's interesting because the Rambam here is operating on two levels, but he says this is one that should be paid attention to. Don't not take this lightly. Every time that we have a holiday, every time we bring an offering, it is always going to be a Sir Izim L'Chatat. It's as if holiday time we get together as families, and maybe we have to still think about the part of family which isn't here, or the part of family that came together we want to kill, and sorry, that we have to remember the Mechirat Yosef, And remember what happens when families don't get together, but by every single holiday, there is a series of lechatat, and the Rambam is saying, notice what Chazal say, and they're right, and don't take this lightly, because this is really something which is a profound insight. The Targum Yonatan in source number 5, I think that's clearly the implication, that as long as we're still suffering from Sinat Chinam, it certainly is enough of a reason to generate the obligation to bring the goat as a sin offering. Source number 5 is the Targum Yonatan, or Pseudo-Yonatan, and he's the one who notices, well, again, we thought was obvious, Asher Yizkor Lo Zechut Shel Yitzchak She'akado Aviv Ka'ail. Bahar ha'avodahar, and so on, shneim yushlamim, and so on. Which means he notices the connection of the aisle, which we did as well. Okay. Let's go back to the first source, and then see what happens next. We're told twice, if we do everything right, this is the day that everything will be fixed. We're told twice that on this day God will reveal. So what do we then start reading? Pasuk Zayin, Vayom Moshe Aaron, go ahead, go to the Mizbeach, bring your chatat, bring the olah, v'chaper batcha ba'adam, and bring about kapara for you and for the people. V'aseid korban ha'am v'chaper ba'adam kasher tziv Hashem. Go ahead, start acting as a Kohen, and bring atonement. Go ahead and bring atonement. V'yikrav Aaron to Mizbeach, he did it. V'yishchat et egel ha'chatat asher lo, v'yakrivu b'nei Aaron et adam. And now you realize that b'nei Aaron are together with Aaron, and they're involved in this as well. They bring a love, they bring the blood to him, and Aaron then sprinkles the blood and so on, all that needs to be done. Pasuk Yud, they did it, ka'asher tziva Hashem et Moshe. They did everything exactly as they were commanded. Continue, we have more Shechita in Pasuk Yud Bet. V'imtziu b'nei Aaron, we find that they're involved again. Pasuk Tet Zayin, v'yikrav et ha'olah v'yaseh kamishpat. So far, what are we hearing? Aaron and sons, right, that could be the name of the Kohen company, Aaron and sons are doing the work, they're bringing atonement, they're doing it exactly as commanded. Again, we find B'nai Aaron together with Aaron, and everything was done. Pasuk of Bet. Now, Pasuk of Bet, when we read it, we're not going to notice the problem. When we read it, we're not going to notice how tragic it is, because we're going to miss it completely. Okay? So I'm just warning you, we'll miss it, and then we'll try to explain it. But Pasuk of Bet is absolutely devastating. V'yisa Aaron Yadav. Aaron then lifts up his hands to bless the people. And this may be the first instance of Birkat Kohen, except there's one commentary that says that when Moshe lifted up his hands during the battle against Amalek, that's what he did. He did Birkat Kohenim at that point. Vayisa Aaron Yadav Elaam, Vayivarchem, and he blesses them. Vayered, and now he comes down, Miyasota Chatat, Vahola, Vashlamim. And he comes down after having brought the offerings and did what he needed to do. So now I said that this is devastating, and why is it devastating? It sounds very nice. Everything was done. Why? Well, Esh is because you're cheating because you went ahead. It's not Esh is the problem. The problem is something else. Moshe said that God will be revealed on this day. So where's God? The problem is there's no response. We read the next pasuk, V'yavo Moshe be'aro. Now Moshe gets involved. El Olmoid, they go into the Olmoid, Vayetsu, and they come out, Vivirchu ta'am, and together they bless the people, Vayira kavod Hashem al kol ha'am. And now the glory of God is seen. Vateitse esh melefnei Hashem, and apparently how is it manifest that the fire comes out from in front of God, mi lefnei Hashem, notice those words, Vatochel alam izbeach, and they swallow up what's on the altar, et ha'olah, the complete burnt offering, Vata chalavim, Vayar kol ha'am, and the people see this, and what do? Vayaronu, they break into song, v'yipluo p'neihem, and they fall on their faces, which means the people are ecstatic. Why? Because it worked. Ever since the Chet Egel, again, just think about this, Chet Egel, Shavasa B'Tamuz, we are Rosh Chodesh Nisan, almost a full year later, they've been living with this fear, with this anxiety, with this depression. They built this, and they donated and made everything right, and now the offerings were brought. And it worked. It worked. Fire comes out of heaven. God is with them. All is forgiven. They can dance and they can sing and we can move on. But there may be one person, and maybe more than one person, who is still feeling that maybe this did not happen the way it was supposed to happen. because something's missing over here. And I hope that you all understand that pause between Pasuk Kaf Bet and Pasuk Kaf Gimel was a devastating pause. That Pasuk Kaf Bet, when Aaron completed everything he was supposed to complete and nothing happened, versus the next Pasuk, where it does happen, but what's the difference between the two? The difference is Moshe. And Moshe's always able to do magical things. Moshe's able to bring all kinds of things down from heaven. Moshe giving fire from heaven, man from heaven, or the Torah from heaven. The fact that it came down when Moshe did it does not necessarily make Aaron feel any better. So yeah, the people are very happy because end of the day, God is here, everything is forgiven. Do they really care it's Moshe Aaron? At least not at this point. Maybe Korach will come later on and utilize this particular failure. Or maybe not. But some people notice it. And for Aaron at least, this has to be something which, as I said before, would be incredibly, incredibly painful. When we look at the Targum Yonatan in source number 8, and again, it's the emotional issue that I want you to pay attention to. Vayifros Aaron yadav v'keneged ha'am v'yivrchem, and Aaron spreads out his hands and he blesses them. Vayerim min ha'mizbeach b'simcha, and he comes down in joy. Again, a Kohen should bless out of joy, b'simcha, right, love and joy. Why? Min shesiyem lasot ha'chatat v'olav v'zevach ha'kodshim, and everything is great. Kevin Shinasua Korbanot. Now look his introduction to Kaf Gimel. Kevin Shinasua Korbanot, V'lo Nitgalta Shechina, Haya Aaron Nivhal. Aaron was in shock. V'yomu L'Moshe, Shema Lo Nitratza, Mamrosh Hashem B'Masayadai. Maybe God is not accepting what I did. And then Moshe and Aaron go together. But I wanna read this in the Sifra, because as I said, everything is here, and I wanna read it. Source number 10. Vayavo Moshe v'Aaron el Ohel Moed, kevan shera'a Aaron shekirbo kol ha'korbanot v'nasu kol ha'ma'asim v'lo yirda shechina l'Yisrael. So now you realize that those words, the Targum Yonatan, is word for word the Sifra. Haya omed Aaron u'mitzta'er. He's watching all this and he is in pain. Amar yodea ani shaka'as alai ha'makom. He says, I know that God is mad at me. Bishvili lo yirda shechina l'Yisrael, and the reason that the fire did not come down, the reason God did not appear, the shechina did not return, is because of me. Kach, and then this is an interesting line. Kach asali Moshe achi, my brother just set me up. Kishenachnasti v'nitbayashti v'lo yirda shechina l'Yisrael. He goes, maybe Moshe knew this was going to happen, and he just made me look completely. He knew. Miyad nichnas Moshe imo. So Moshe went in. Ubikshu rachamim. And he davened. V'yerd ha'shechina l'Yisrael. And the Shechina came down. L'kach ne'mar v'yo Moshe v'Aaron el Ohel Moed. Now, we all realize at this point that we just got far more complicated, including siblings who one is suspecting the other one. I know we always say Moshe and Aaron get along. And now Aaron is thinking, I just now got set up. I did all the things. And I'm going to say this again. This is a pretty old and authoritative source. And by the way, Rashi quotes it. Okay? Yeah. It's Moshe getting involved. Again, what is beautiful about the Sifra? Is it telling you what happened? I don't know. But it is projecting what Aaron felt. As I say, I'm going back to this point of the feelings. How would Aaron feel at this point? So we know at least the way that he should be feeling is something is wrong, but his brother told him that it's going to work. So now maybe his brother knew it was. As I said, these are kinds of questions that go off in your head, and maybe you don't always articulate them. Look at section Kaf Aleph in the Sifra, and this is exceedingly important. Ba'oto sha'a kafza paranut anadav aviyu. At that moment is when the tragedy of Nadin Avihu was born. Which means it's telling you to notice something. That whatever is going to happen with Nadav and Avihu is directly related to what just now happened with Aaron. This is not, I know that okay, as we start now the Nadav Avihu part of the class, Nadav and Avihu are accused of every single sin imaginable, and some of them that we can't even possibly imagine. Nadav Avihu, if we're going to pause here for a second, and we'll come right back to the Sifra, when we go to the Psukim and we read what happens next, it's source number 13. Again, this is the end of Perek Tet, start of Perek Yud, which he realizes is not organic necessarily. What happens immediately next? V'yichu b'nei Aaron, Nadav Avihu, they go and they take ish machtachto, each one takes his pan, v'yinu b'ha'esh, and they put fire within it, v'yisimu lektorot, and they place within inside it incense, v'yikrivu lifnei Hashem, Esh zara asher lo tziva otam. And they bring in front of God a strange fire which they were not commanded. Result, v'teitze esh lifnei Hashem, a fire comes out in front of God, v'tochal otam, and swallows them, v'yimutu lifnei Hashem. And they died in front of God. Now, something really, really bad just now happened. And we have this like built-in mindset that punishment is related to sin. Suffering is related to sin. I just want to point out that this is not a 100% correlation, which in Jewish thought. Just for example, thinking out loud, there's a Gemara, there is a debate between Rabbi Akiva and a Roman dignitary regarding the mitzvah of tzedakah. The Roman dignitary says that because Jews give tzedakah, they will one day have to face the judgment of God. Why? Because God decreed that these people should be poor. How dare you go against the judgment of God and give them money? By the way, go back to Rome in terms of the real class separations. How dare you help someone from a lower class? Right? The ones who were leaders, this is a God-given right to be a leader. God decided these people should be low. So because you give tzedakah, God will absolutely judge. And by the way, he gives a mashal. Mashal l'mavrdome. He goes, it's like a king who takes somebody, he takes two servants and throws them in the prison and says nobody help them or anything. And then somebody sneaks in and tries to help them in prison. Wouldn't the king be mad? So Rabbi Akiva says, because we give tzedakah, God is going to one day help us in the day of judgment. And he says, mashal l'mavrdome. What's it compared to? It's compared to a king who gets upset with his son. Notice the difference in the mashal. Who gets upset with his son, and he puts his son in his prison, and one of his other sons has compassion for his brother and goes in. Wouldn't the king be happy that the brothers are taking care of one another? So again, just look at the fundamental difference, and it's really slave versus son. But if I were to say that suffering is correlated with sin, then we should never help anybody who is suffering. Say, this is God's punishment. So I'm just saying that we need to be a little careful about that correlation, even though very often rabbis, including Chazal, full disclosure, I mean, whenever something bad happens, you're going to find rabbis jumping up and saying, well, this happened because of this. And although it's so interesting that they always seem to find what bothered them if the thing didn't happen, which means it's like they have a built-in list of what they want to talk about. So therefore, when children, God forbid, got killed in a fire a number of months ago, and by the way, the father was a student of mine. Okay, and when his children were killed, oh, it's because of the internet. When did you have this revelation that God came into? And by the way, but just notice the philosophy: something bad happens, there must be again suffering is correlated to sin. So we do that with Nadav and Avihu as well. And there are approaches within Chazal that will tell you the most horrific things. You can take your pick, which one you like. There's a particularly ominous one, which is found in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It says that that Moshe and Aaron were leading the people, and they were walking behind, and one turns to the other and says, one of these old guys is going to die already that we can take over. Now, you hear that, and you say, wow, that's unbelievable. There's another one that says that they died because they never got married, because what did they say? One says, listen, our father is the Kohen Gadol, our uncle is the leader, our other uncle is a Nasi. What girl is good enough for us? And they never got married, and that's why. So again, you start hearing these things. Another, because they ruled in front of Moshe, Rashi brings that. Because they were drunk, the drinking comes right out. And so you start piling on. The Torah never says they sinned. The Torah says they did this, and they died. But it never says that they sinned. So part of what we're going to do now is that we are going to try to save the reputations of Nadav and Avihu right now and try to understand what they're doing. The first thing that I'm pointing out then is we go back to source number 10 and look at the Sifra in Kaf Aleph. It says, "Ba'oto sha'ak of tzapor notan Nadav Avihu." At that moment is when Nadav and Avihu got worked up. Why do they get worked up? Because they're watching their father who was just now humiliated. Nobody else catches it. They were the ones working with their father. You notice Banav. And there it said they did everything according to instruction. By the way, notice, you do everything according to instruction, and it didn't happen. So what do you have to do now? Maybe now you have to do something which is not according to instruction in order to get the right the right result. When you look at Kav Bet, Davar Acher, I think that's a mistake, not Davar Amar, Davar Acher, Kaven Sheru B'nei Aaron, Shekirbu Kol HaKorbanot, V'nasu Kol HaMa'asim. Again, Aaron saw this before, and he gets depressed. They see their father did all the offerings, did everything. They noticed the fire was missing. By the way, this is very strange. Didn't the fire just come down? They took this other fire, the strange fire. Strange compared to what? Strange compared to the fire that had just come down. But why didn't they want the fire that just came down? Because the fire that just came down, they understood that came down because of Moshe. And in order to illustrate that the family of Aaron has been forgiven, you need for the fire to come down because of the family of Aaron. And therefore, they're not asking Moshe. They're not using Moshe because, of course, Moshe can do it. Moshe just brought down the fire. But that fire that Moshe brought down did not do anything to show that God had forgiven Aaron, had forgiven their father. And again, the Sifra is right now drawing this correlation, which maybe sometimes we miss because we separated. Oh, they got caught up in all the excitement of the day and said, oh, come, let's go do our own thing. That's the way a lot of people will read this. But it's very convenient to see, again, to go according to the Adonenu Moreinu, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who divides between Perek Tet and Perek Yud. No, this is immediately afterwards. And look at the Sifra. They saw what happened. Or more importantly, they saw what didn't happen. They wanted the sign to come from heaven that their father has been forgiven. And it wasn't enough that it came from Moshe, and therefore they feel they need to be... You're right. They see their father's not forgiven, which is gets the thing. I want to point something out. What did they do? What did they bring? What was the offering? A ketoret. Isn't that interesting? We're going to have... Remember I told in the beginning that there's one other place that makes reference to time? Where else in Sefer Yerikah does it make a reference to time? Acherei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aaron. There's a reference. It's very subtle. But there's a reference. Acherei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aaron. Isn't that interesting? What is that about to introduce? Yom Kippur. Why phrase Yom Kippur as Acherei Mot, Shnei Bnei Aaron? What connection is that? Why don't you just say, and God said to Moshe, say to Aaron, this is what you need to do on Yom Kippur. Why start Yom Kippur Acherei Mot B'nei Aaron? Okay, so I'm just starting with that. What is the key worship which is done in Yom Kippur? The Kohen goes into the Kaddish Kedoshim, and what does he carry with him? The Ketoret. It's pretty interesting that the intuition of Nadav and Avihu to carry and to take the incense is actually, God supports this and says, yeah, correct. Bring in the incense. Now, let me go a little bit further, because we need to notice something which I think perhaps we missed. Let me add just one more element, which I've said before, but this will, I think, make things a little bit richer. What date was this? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Anybody remember the Pasuk? First of all, Chazal. There's a Chazal that says, before you get married, you have to check out your wife's brothers. Right? Where does Chazal get that from, and which Pasuk does it say it to? Where does it say it? It says that Aaron married Elisheva, Achot, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Rashi there is troubled. Why does he should say Aaron married Elisheva, the daughter of, why the sister of Nachshon? So Rashi says, from here you learn that you could look at someone's brother. Okay. Who was Nachshon ben Aminadav? He was the... Good. The one who jumped in. So we all know the Midrash, but who was he? He was the Nasi. Now, terrible question to ask, that Nachshon was the first one to walk in, to jump in the water. Is that a pasuk or is that a midrash? You sure? I'll ask again. Is that a pasuk or is that a midrash? I want 100% confidence now. It's a midrash, correct. Be confident, come on. It's a midrash. Where is the midrash and what is the midrash trying to explain? The midrash is in Parshat Naso. What's it trying to explain? That on Yom HaRishon, who brings the Korban? Nasi, Leshevet Yehuda, Nachshon ben Aminadav. And the Midrash wants to know, why in the world is Nachshon first? Why is Yehuda first? Shouldn't Reuven have been first? Why is he first? He says, oh, I'll tell you why Nachshon is first, because when the Jews were by the sea, he was the first one to jump in. Okay, now let's, just three steps. There's only three steps to this. Right, but that's not what the Midrash says. The Midrash says, why is Nachshon first? Because he jumped in. The whole Midrash of him jumping in, and I'm not dealing with is did it happen, did it not happen? That doesn't bother me. The place the Midrash is brought is to explain why Nachshon is the first one to bring the Korban. So now, as I just said, three steps, and then you'll see everything will start to make sense. What does the Midrash also say that before you get married, you look at someone's brother? What were the brothers of Elisheva like? Well, the brother was Nachshon. What was he like? He was first. He was impetuous. He goes and he jumps. What day was he rewarded? Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What day is Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Today. Right now. Which means today, on Yom HaShmini, Nachshon ben Aminadav is being rewarded for his impetuousness, for jumping in and not waiting and not asking Moshe, just jumping into the water and then the sea splits. So let's just stop for a second. On the very day that Nachshon is rewarded, his nephews are watching this, and what conclusion do they have? Sometimes you just have to go, you have to jump, and maybe there is this DNA and this personality trait as well, which the Midrash, again, is telling us. So they look, Nachshon's being rewarded for jumping, not his kimosha. They do the exact same thing. By the way, now you just have a Dvar Torah, you can say you don't need everything else I'm saying today. But, let's go now a little bit further. Now we understand a little bit about, I'm not going to say what motivates them, but what energizes them. Still, the motivation, I think, goes back to their father's suffering. Now, I do want to point out, I think, that there's a huge difference. There's a difference between a time of war, a soldier, seeing that something has to be done and goes and does what has to be done. By the way, I'm not making any kind of political statement now. That somebody goes and sees something has to be done and he goes ahead and does it. Versus in the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash, when I want to be creative in the way that I'm going to serve God. There's a huge difference in terms of context. But even though there's a difference in terms of context, that doesn't necessarily mean that the motivation is all that different, because the motivation could be exactly the same. Now let me go back a little bit to try to fill in what may be missing over here. Go back to source number one, and let's read Pasuk Kaf Dalet. Vateitse eish milifnei Hashem, vatochal al mizbeach et ha'olah. Full stop. Notice all those words. A fire comes from in front of God, v'tochal al mizbeach et ha'olah. And what does the fire swallow up? The olah. Go over now to source 13, pasuk bet, v'teitze esh milafnei Hashem v'tochal, and stop. It's the exact same words. Remember I said earlier that there was something which was ominous that we didn't notice at that point was ominous? When Moshe says twice that there's going to be God is going to reveal himself? Well, look at that. God revealed himself twice. Once, when the fire comes down and swallows the Mizbeach, swallows the Ola, and the second time, the exact same words, when the fire comes down and swallows, now we just have to go to one more word, and what word is that? Otam. Now, there's no question that what Nadav and Avihu try to do is to bring a Ketoret, and the Ketoret itself, I'm going to say it again. I think was accepted in the sense that God now, Acharei Mot Shnei B'nei Aaron, the Ketoret is what they're told to bring, and that becomes the Yom Kippur service, includes the Ketoret. On the other hand, and this is the irony which we never expected, we didn't see it coming, they end up becoming a Korban Ola. As I said, that word is missing, but that's the exact... A Korban Ola is an Ola, it completely goes up to God. Which means that's what happened to them. They end up becoming a Korban Ola, which means they want to bring the Torah and God accepts them as a Korban Ola, and the fire comes down and accepts them as a Korban Ola. Now, I'm going to say something which you're going to have a very hard time accepting. Were they upset with what happened? Nadav and Avihu. Were they upset with this? I don't think so. I think this was, again, dying is bad, and take dying out of the whole equation right now. Slow down. Shh, shh, shh. Dying is a bad thing. I understand that. They saw their father being humiliated and saw their father was not able to bring the fire down from heaven. They go and they succeed in bringing the fire down from heaven. Don't you see? It's the exact same words. What their father couldn't do but only was done together with Moshe, and that fire they didn't want to use. Instead, they bring the Ketoret and they bring their own fire, and God's response is to come down with the fire. Now, it's fascinating. And again, it all has to do with death. It's fascinating. But when the fire comes down in the previous chapter, everyone breaks into song, and this is wonderful, they bow down. Look, God is with us. And when the act of God, the exact same formulation, the fire comes down, we're, oh, look what happened. Well, you know what? Moshe and Rashi, or Rashi understanding Moshe, understand it in somewhat of a different way. Look at source, look at the continuation in 13, Pasuk Gimel. Vayoma Moshe al Aaron, hu asher diber Hashem. This is what God referred to. Leimor bikrovai ekadesh v'opnei kol ha'am ekabed v'yidom Aaron. Rashi, hu asher diber, heichan diber, v'nadati sham lefnei bisov nekdash bechodi. Make myself known, and I will be sanctified. My honor will be. Al tukri bechvodi, ala b'mechubadi, amul ha'moshe la'aron. And this is chilling. This is frightening. Amul ha'moshe la'aron, Aaron achi, my brother Aaron. Yodea hayiti, I always knew. Sheyitkadesh habayit b'miyuadav, that this Mishkan will be sanctified by those who are close to God. Miyodav shel makom. Vayiti savur, and I was expecting bi o bicha. I thought either it would be me or you. Achshav ro'ani shehim gdolim mimenu mimcha. And now I see that they're even greater than us. I want to go back to the Akedah. The Akedah, what happened? We had Yitzchak as an Ola, and Yitzchak gets, again, a father told to offer his son. We have Yitzchak as an Ola, and God does not want this Ola. And God says, no, the ram will be the Ola, and takes the ram in the place. Somehow, something went terribly wrong over here, and Nadav and Avihu become a Korban Ola to start this Mishkan. I'm going to say it again. You're not going to like what I'm saying, so it's okay. You don't have to tell me you don't like it. I'm fine with it. That on some level, in order for this Mishkan to be taken seriously, in order for the Beit HaMikdash to be taken seriously, this connection between the fact that an animal can take the place of a person, we need to see that this is a real thing. And the first, so we have Aaron bringing the Korban Ola, and we have right afterwards Nadav Avihu feeling, no, this isn't enough. We need to go in. And by Lefnei Hashem, they bring the Torah Lefnei Hashem. They want to go in. They want to do this. And God just goes and accepts it. I want to say one more thing, and then we'll stop, just to bring it a little bit more Kabbalistic. As we noticed, a number of people blame them for getting drunk. Right afterwards, God says to Aaron, "Yain v'shecher al tesh tatol v'necha itach b'vochem alo moed v'lo tamutu." Don't drink when you come in, and don't die. What's the implication? They drink, and therefore they died. The various commentaries play with this in different ways. Ibn Ezra in 15, because the wine will make you confused. The Ramban says, well, maybe this supports the opinion, says that they were actually drunk. I'm going to skip all the way to the last source, but I need to explain what it is, who it is, and what he says, and what he's basing himself on. So give me a second on this. The greatest Kabbalist of the 19th and 20th centuries was a man by the name of Rav Elyashiv. Rav Shlomo Elyashiv had a grandson who was very, very famous, whose name was Rav Elyashiv. By the way, that's not as simple as you think, because Rav Elyashiv, the grandson, he was the grandson. Was Rav Elyashiv his maternal or his paternal grandfather? Answer is, he was his maternal grandfather, not his paternal, that his father took the mother's family name. And just in case you think that's very feminist and you can't believe this, the Chafetz Chaim told him to do it. Okay? So there's a lot more to say about that, but I won't tell you. I'd rather say it in a way that will bother you a little bit. But that's the. But that nonetheless is factual. Rav Elyashiv, as I said, the grandfather, was the greatest Kabbalist in the world. He was many people that you've heard of their teaching in terms of Kabbalah. Anybody in Europe who learned Kabbalah made their way to learn Kabbalah with Rav Elyashiv. He eventually came to Israel. Rav Kook got him into Israel. Rav Kook studied with him, and when he died, there's a story that he brings his student, the Nazir, Rav David Cohen, and says, the greatest Kabbalist has died, and there's a vacuum in the world in terms of learning Kabbalah. We need to learn more Kabbalah now. So that's Rav Elyashiv. Rav Elyashiv then, the grandson, his Masada Kedushin was Rav Kook, who made the Shidduch for him with the daughter of a student of Rav Kook's, who was Rabbi Levin. So of all that now comes together. So let us now go back to him. What the Leshem says is as follows. First of all, he's based upon the Zohar. The Zohar says that the Eitz Hadaat Tov V'Ra was grapes. Why? What kind of tree causes confusion between good and evil? So he says it's grapes. This is, by the way, a post-Purim talk. So drinking grapes brings about confusion in the world. The Zohar says that Nadav and Avihu were trying to fix the sin of Adam HaRishon. So I'm going to read those words now in the Leshem, which I've said is coming from the Zohar, and I cut out all the complicated parts. Source 22, Nadav Aviyu Itaru Erbuvia, they themselves, they brought in this confusion. The name of Warab Mikolzeh, Kihem Nechshalu Gamkein, Meachet Adam HaRishon V'Noach. Noach also uses wine and fails. Ki heim nichnesu b'hanisayon hazeh v'ratzu l'takein et achet Adam HaRishon. They wanted to fix the sin of Adam, which means, what's motivating them? Now we're going on a deeper level. What's motivating them? They said, well, take a look. The sin of the golden calf is going to be forgiven on this day. And the sin of Mechirat Yosef is going to be forgiven this day. So let's go one step further. Let's get forgiveness for the very first sin. And let's do a complete tikkun. Now, what do they then do? The sin was the confusion. Let's take the wine, use the wine, and go in and try to go in with clarity. And I know that this is not making sense, but the choice of Torah now becomes absolutely clear, at least to me. The Bnei Yisrael wrote, and I've quoted this many times, and he writes it many times. He says that the sin of Adam and Chava was a sin of all the senses, except for one. It says that she listens to the words of the Nachash, she sees the tree, she touches the tree, and she eats the tree. And he says the only sense that was not corrupted was the sense of smell. So therefore, Nadav and Avihu were trying to fix the sin. They use the sense of smell, they use the Ktoret in order to try, they take the wine and they take the Ktoret, trying to fix the very first sin that took place. So therefore, the Ktoret's not an accident. The Ktoret now becomes absolutely focused on the Ktoret. They go in with the Ktoret, with the wine, and a Kaddish Baruch Hu feels, and again, notice the word that maybe we keep missing. The word, the phrase is Lefnei Hashem. It says, V'ichu b'nei Aaron nodav aviyu ish matov yinu b'hem eish v'simu lektoret, v'yikruvu Lefnei Hashem. They go Lefnei Hashem. They just go very far. They go very deep. V'teitze eish min Lefnei Hashem. V'yamutu Lefnei Hashem. By the way, hopefully you can't miss this Lefnei Hashem, which means they are doing something which is so holy, they're doing something which is so profound, they're trying to fix literally the entire world. God is essentially saying, we're not ready for everything to be fixed yet. You two are too holy, you two come back, you two are a korban ola tamim. You are completely pure, and therefore you have now become a korban ola, and therefore they generate the exact same response that Moshe and Aaron had previously generated by bringing the fire down. And in fact, on this day, as I said, twice God appears. As Moshe said earlier, twice he mentions that there's going to be a revelation over here. The first time the revelation takes place, I'm going to say it again, there was pain that was experienced by Aaron because he sort of still has this feelings of guilt. He has this feeling that maybe he was not forgiven. He has this feeling of humiliation. And maybe even he harbors some distrust towards his brother who he feels maybe set him up because it just hasn't happened like he believed it was supposed to happen. The ones who profoundly feel their father's pain, and now, as I said, this is the Sifra, the one who profoundly feel their father's pain, or the ones who, are Nadav Avihu, and they say, we need to bring the fire down to show that Bnei Aaron are forgiven, and therefore they are going to do something to bring the fire down, and they're successful. Now, of course, we are result-oriented, and we look at the world, but they died, so it must have been bad. So I question that correlation. I question that way that we look at it. And I point out that everything they did was Lefnei Hashem. They brought it Lefnei Hashem, the fire comes out from Lefnei Hashem, and they die Lefnei Hashem. And every single time in the Torah, and there's another three, four times, that it talks about the deaths of Nadav Avihu, it never said they died because they sinned, b'chetam, anything. It always says two words about their death. They died Lefnei Hashem. They died close to God. Their choice was they wanted to go close to Hashem. They wanted to go Lefnei Vidafim. They wanted to bring the fire down. Whether they intended the fire to take them or not, that I can't say. I don't believe that this was a suicide mission. I don't believe that at all. I believe they were, and again, the Zohar and Rabbi Yoshua Leshem gets very, very deep. They wanted to go back and fix everything. Let's just go one step further and fix everything. And they wanted their kavana, right? They wanted to bring a ktoret, and God turned them into an ola. As I said, this parallel with the Akedah is frightening, because there we have the attempted ola and the replacement with the ayel, and over here we have starting with the ayel, and lo and behold, at the end, his children end up getting turned into a korban ola. So that's something which we never expected. But I do believe that the way to read the death of Nadav and Avihu is together with the Akedah, and then to compare and contrast and see how perhaps they're even mirror images of one another, because over there it's the son who gets turned into the Ola, and over here it's the Ola that get turned into the sons.